Awesome, like podcasts and stuff?
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
Welcome in, everybody. This is the first May edition of the Awful Announcing Podcast. I will be joined by Andrew Buchholz and Joe Lucia in just a moment. But before we get to them, the Awful Announcing Podcast is presented by Clipit, the number one way to share your favorite clips with your family and friends. Actually used it the other day amidst the beef between Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley. I think that was a little bit overblown. I don't know if it was necessarily a beef, but it was just amusing, great television. Which is something that Inside the NBA has done for a number of years. So I was able to send that along. A friend of mine hadn't seen it. And voila, Clip It app. So thanks to them for being our presenting sponsor here of the Awful Announcing Podcast. Joe Lucia is with us. Hi, Joe.
Hello, Ben. How are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. It's good to have you back. And, of course, Andrew Buchholz joins us as well. What's up, Andrew?
Not too much. Thanks for having me, Ben.
Thanks for being here, guys. Let's start with a conversation that I feel like we've had numerous times on the roundtable, but it is finally now official. ESPN has announced their Monday Night Football team. It will be with Jason Witten. He has announced his retirement. He will go from retirement to the broadcast booth, join Joe Tessitore. They'll have Booker McFarlane on the sidelines as well, and I believe Lisa Salters will also be on the sidelines for all of it. Andrew, you had a chance to sit through and hear part of their conference call today. Do you have any big takeaways from this new booth?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of interesting things. I mean, for me, the really interesting part was hearing about Booger McFarlane's role here. And this is something that ESPN hasn't done for the NFL before. They haven't done for Monday Night Football. It's the first time they're having a field analyst there. And I thought it was interesting as they clarified how that's going to work. And it's going to be much more sort of like a three-man booth where you have Booger regularly commenting from the sidelines. It's not going to be, oh, we're throwing down to him for a special report or anything. So it's essentially, it's a three-man booth, but one of the people in that booth is on the sidelines. And so that makes it sort of like what NBC has done with a lot of the NHL, where you'll have one analyst like Mike Bilbury up in the booth, and then you'll have another one, Pierre McGuire, between the benches. And I think that could lead to some interesting things. You do get somebody offering sort of that regular commentary based on what they're seeing from the benches, how people are reacting. I think it's also interesting that he's involved, given that he comes from playing defensive line, which is something where you don't see a ton of top booth analysts coming from that, rather than from being a quarterback. The other thing that was interesting of this is there really does seem to be some pretty good chemistry already. They were all going back and forth about the different dinners they've had together, the way they've interacted with each other's children, and so on. And there seems to be a pretty good rapport between Jason Witten, between Booger McFarland, and then when you work in Joe Tessitore and Lisa Salters as well. I think it's a group that at least at this point seems to be gelling pretty well, and we'll see if that makes the transition to air.
Joe, I don't know if it's necessarily an exciting hire bringing everybody together, but what are your thoughts on the idea that there could be some good chemistry early on and the fact that ESPN feels like this is going to be a good mix and a better mix for maybe sports fans?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be something different from what we've got in the last few years with Sean McDonough and before him, John and Mike Tirico and John Gruden. I really don't know about Jason Witten. I don't think anyone really knows at this point. He could be the next Tony Romo. He could be another guy that flames out in a couple of years, like kind of like Ray Lewis did, who everyone thought was going to be the next big analyst, and it just didn't go off for him. I'm really interested to see how the Booger McFarland role works. If they're going to have him like rotating sidelines, if he's going to be like in behind an end zone, or if he's going to kind of have like his own little pod down there, or what. The Angels actually kind of do something similar. They have analyst Jose Mota in the camera well, and he kind of functions as a third man reporter. He's really like the third guy in the team. He's not just like a reporter they'll cut down to for a little 30-second hit. He's always commenting on the action and giving a little bit of a field-level view of what's going on. So I'm really interested to see how that works. And I'm not exactly pessimistic about it. I'm not optimistic. I'm just kind of curious.
Here's what I like about it. I like the fact that ESPN, after going full on big name with Gruden for so many years, and then pairing him up in what was, I don't want to call it an uncomfortable booth, because I think Sean McDonough's a pro, but you could tell that it was not a great back and forth dynamic. Gruden had his strengths. I don't know if McDonough necessarily maximized them. I think with this booth, I think what ESPN is doing is they're sort of going back to the fans and saying, okay, you want really good, smart football people? I think we're going to be able to do this with this type of broadcast. Witten is not the big name that they were initially looking to hire, but it's still a name nonetheless, and a guy that's always been a pretty well-spoken guy. I don't know how he'll necessarily do in the booth. I know that Tessitore has always done a really good job of making his analysts not necessarily the star, because Tessitore likes to have some of his star moments, but I think he's really good at setting up his analysts, giving them a question, bring them into something, and I think early on for Witten that'll work. I think with Booker McFarland on the sideline, I like that dynamic of having a different perspective. They always say that when you're watching a football game that you should watch it from the offensive line perspective, because the camera is going to take you to where the ball is. And so now having those eyes directly on the field with McFarland, I think that's playing to more of the big football fan, as opposed to just, this is Monday Night Football, this is supposed to be a big spectacle. So I'm cautiously optimistic about the three of those guys working together and bringing in Lisa Salters, who's always been a pro for a long time. So maybe that's just me, but I tend to believe that this, I think this could actually work.
I do think the one other thing that was interesting, and there was a question about how these guys are going to handle being critical, and if they're going to be critical of players and of coaches when they make their own decisions. And I thought, obviously, it's a conference call, so it's not necessarily indicative of what they'll actually do, but I thought they said all the right things. I thought both Jason Witten and Booker McFarland said they're going to weigh in that way when it's appropriate. They're not there just to be buddy-buddy with everybody. I thought Witten made a good point about hey, I've always been fine with people criticizing my play, and I understand they're doing a job, and I'm going to do the same thing. And Booker said similar things, and Joe Tessitore said he was really impressed with how Booker criticized his former coach in Les Miles when that all happened a little while ago, and yeah, that really showed that he can be objective and can be critical when it's warranted. And I think that may be the biggest difference in this Monday night move compared to the last one, because for all the things John Gruden did well, I think the biggest knock on him was that he was always so positive. It was right. Always this guy, I'm so excited about this guy. And I think it could be really refreshing for viewers to hear some warranted criticism when it is warranted.
Do you have any concerns, Joe, that they might be saying something and may not necessarily follow through with it? Or you have the belief that, yeah, they'll actually be a little bit more critical? And I guess sort of a two-part question, do you see this booth as an upgrade over McDonough and Gruden?
I do think it is an upgraded booth, just because there was no real chemistry between McDonough and Gruden. It just did not work for me for the last, what was it, two seasons. I just felt like they were two guys that were just kind of stuck together instead of natural pairing. And I don't know if this is going to be any more natural or any better, but I'm really more concerned that Witten is going to try to look at how Tony Romo has done his broadcasting career over his first year and try to imitate Tony Romo and be like Tony Romo instead of just being himself. If he's himself and is critical and is able to provide competent analysis, I think it'll be fun.
The reason that I think we won't have to worry about that is I feel like that's a quarterback thing. You know, being at the line of scrimmage, calling the plays, it almost felt like it was much more natural to Romo. I think Witten could probably theoretically do it, but Romo sort of presented it in a way that because he's the guy under center, he's the one that's overseeing the offense, it's more likely that he knows what's coming versus Witten, you know, is somebody that I think will be able to better analyze the game once it happens and once it goes in front of him. We can get to more of this coming up maybe in another time, but I also want to get into another component of ESPN. With regards to a new decision that they made, there will no longer be a 6. It will just go back to the standard 6 p.m. Sports Center. Kevin Gandhi and Sage Steele will now be the two hosts of the 6 p.m. Sports Center. Very similar to sort of them sort of going back to what sports fans are expecting and not trying to invent the wheel. I think ESPN got it right by bringing Nagandy and Sage Steele. Both of them have been seasoned veterans for a long time. I think they know how to do the job without putting a whole lot of their voice and without a lot of their opinion for it. I always preferred, I enjoyed the six, and I liked Jamel Hill and Michael Smith. But I think the majority of SportsCenter viewers wanted it to be closer to the original SportsCenter that they knew and that they loved. You guys think that ESPN got it right by bringing two staples back? I don't know if I should call them staples, but two mainstays. And Joe, I'll start with you on this one.
Yeah, I think that was probably the proper decision instead of trying to spin this into some kind of fancy new SportsCenter that's somewhat gimmicky, like they had SportsCenter AM, SportsCenter Coast to Coast. It's just SportsCenter at 6 p.m. But the problem is the same problem that has always come across the 6 p.m. SportsCenter. Who is watching this and why are they watching it? Personally, I'm out here on the West Coast, so 6 p.m. is 3 p.m. I'm either working or I have other better things to do when the 6 p.m. SportsCenter is airing. And for the fans on the East Coast, I mean, it's around dinner time. You're just getting home from work. You're focusing on other things. And launching during the summer as well, I mean, there's baseball and hockey and basketball playoffs for the next month until August. I mean, it's not like there's going to be all this breaking news and analysis that needs to be done at 6 p.m. So I just think I think it's a situation where no matter what they ended up doing with this time slot, they're going to have themselves a battle on their hands to bring viewers back.
What's your perspective on this, Andrew?
I think it'll always, this is really a reaction to a lot of the criticism against SC6 and against Michael Smith and Jamel Hill. I think having Sage Steele for this is particularly a reaction, perhaps, because you're certainly not going to accuse a show hosted by Sage Steele of being woke sicker. That's not going to happen. I think in... And it's interesting, sort of, I think, the management change that's sort of going over all of this, right? Because for a long while, Rob King was overseeing SportsCenter. The idea was, okay, people aren't watching SportsCenter anymore. People can see highlights on their phone. We're doing this with personalities. We're going to make every show a distinct edition. We're going to have it focused around a distinct personality. And we're going to do that with Scott Van Pelt for the midnight one. We're going to do that with SportsCenter AM. We're going to have the regular presence there, and then we're going to do that with the six, with Michael and Jamel, and we're really going to emphasize the personalities and the takes rather than it being just generic SportsCenter. And ever since it switched to Norby Williamson, it's very much we're going back to what we were doing before. We're going back to just interchangeable editions of SportsCenter apart from Scott Van Pelt. We're going back to the news. We're setting the table for the night in sports. And who knows? I mean, maybe it'll work. I think Joe made a lot of great points about the challenges you have in doing anything at 6 p.m. I think this is what a lot of people who didn't like the six were clamoring for, of just give us the news, just tell us what games are coming up. The real question for me, though, is if any of those people who were such vocal critics of the six and of Michael and Jamel, if any of them are actually going to watch this, or if they're just happy that, oh, well, SportsCenter, the way I used to watch it, is back, even if I'm not watching it.
Let me ask you guys sort of a random question, because this kind of popped into my mind. And maybe it's an overt reaction to a situation that ESPN is facing with the terrible ratings of Get Up. And I've said on Twitter that I actually enjoy Get Up. I might be one of the few people out there that enjoys tuning it in and, you know, making my morning smoothie. And I enjoy the reaction between Beadle and Rose and Greenberg and whoever they bring in. I've thought it's been a good show, but I just think they got off to a really bad foot and it's going to be hard for them to recover. Is there any sort of sense maybe from ESPN, and Andrew, I'll start with you on this one, that as they went towards more of these personality-driven shows and these big contract, big high-profile people all coming together, that they said, this is not working in our favor. We need to take a step back and maybe Get Up with sort of that last straw for them to come to this decision.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think there's very much a push and pull there. I think we saw in the layoffs last year, they're moving away from some of that. They're moving away from sort of the personalities of the second tier people. They're moving away from the sort of the lower down people, but they're still very much trying to emphasize and trying to sell us on these personalities. I mean, Get Up really is an attempt to sell us on Mike Greenberg's personality, if he has one. And we're emphasizing Mike Greenberg. We're playing him off Michelle Beadle. We're playing him off Jalen Rose. I think there's still a lot of things, challenges for that show beyond that, but I don't think they're going to turn away from emphasizing those people at the moment. I think the other one that's really notable there is Stephen A. Smith, and they're emphasizing him more than ever, really. I mean, they're like, oh, we're having him host SportsCenter. We're having him on SportsCenter every night, breaking down the NBA playoffs. Like, Stephen A. Smith's more the face of ESPN than he's ever been, and they're certainly not going away from that personality. And then even with stuff like the Katie Nolan thing that came out this week, that sure, they may not have used her all that much so far, but they're finding some ways to use her. They're doing SportsCenter Snapchat stuff. So I think they're into big personalities when it's the right personality and when it's the top personality, and they're going to play up those top tier people even more. But I think they're also at the same time being like, okay, well, we don't need to make every SportsCenter personality. We don't need everybody to be this big star that we're promoting their take. They're going to promote a few people's personalities and takes, and then everybody else is going to be sort of interchangeable.
Yeah, and sort of by consequence, Joe, maybe it's using the platform of SportsCenter to bring in people who they know can move the conversation along, that can also put it up on a tee for those big personalities to just go and let loose.
Yeah, I agree. And it also seems like they're kind of emphasizing the big personalities that are kind of already established. Like, they're not, like, Scott Van Pelt's been a dude at ESPN for years upon years, and he's going to host this SC Live Twitter show or whatever it is. And he's a guy that, I mean, they're going to be banking on a lot more in the future. And we're going to see it a little bit later with Dan Lebatard's serious contract up. He might end up going somewhere else. I don't think he will. I think we could see more of a focus on him in the future. Those type of guys that have been around for the last few years and have been in the spotlight, in the limelight, I think those are the guys that ESPN is going to kind of keep banking on going forward.
With the success of Lebatard's show, because you sort of led me there, Joe, do you think there's any chance ESPN doesn't bring it back? It, purely based on the popularity of their show, and you know, they're probably getting the best numbers on ESPN News that they've ever had from that 10-1 Eastern slide. Any chance ESPN decides this is not a direction we want to continue to go in?
I couldn't see ESPN walking away. I could see something like the Chris Russo route with him. I could see him getting a Godfather offer and walking away, but I can't see ESPN just deciding, okay, this isn't worth our time anymore. We're going to go in another direction.
If he does that, though, we are digging up every single clip of him talking about how everyone else has failed after leaving ESPN. And
but you know what, though? And maybe this is just my bias towards Lebatard and that show. Those other shows and a lot of the people that have left ESPN, they sort of had a very formulaic way of putting their shows and their content together. And I think what's made that show so unique and so special is that they've basically turned it all into satire. And I think that plays everywhere, but maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been very good for ESPN. I think having him at ESPN is a real asset for them. And I think it brings in a lot of us viewers who aren't into the debate and aren't into First Take or Undisputed or whatever. I think his show's much more appealing from that perspective. I think some of the people he has on regularly, and I'm particularly interested to see if this Bomani and Pablo show ever gets off the ground. If it does, I mean, I think that's something he had quite a role in sort of establishing these guys as personalities. And that's something that would sort of carry on from what he's doing and from sort of this irreverent, funny take on the world of sports. So I think there's a lot of appeal for ESPN in keeping him around. I think there's a decent amount of appeal for him in staying around. I mean, he's got a pretty regular video component to his show, which is something you don't necessarily have if you take off for Sirius, but who knows? I mean, it, like Joe said, it really depends on what kind of offers he gets elsewhere.
Yeah, and like Andrew mentioned, with him having all these various personalities on the show, I mean, it helps build up their brand as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, look how much people like Mina Kimes, so we wrote a feature on last week. Look how much she and her her status has grown in the last year or so, and she makes frequent appearances on Levitard. Look at Sarah Spain, another one.
Dominique Foxworth, who was a guest on this very podcast. Couple things that I'm just thinking of right off the top of my head. How great would it be if Poppy just did total heel turn and stayed with ESPN and Levitard just went over to Sirius? That's the first thought. The second thing is that, Andrew, you just brought this up, and this caught my attention as well. On Tony Kornheiser's podcast, when Pablo Torre was a guest with him, how he sort of mentioned that he sees the future of PTI as Pablo Torre and Bomani Jones. I don't know. We've been waiting and waiting and waiting to try and figure out what exactly ESPN is going to do with them. And we know, I think their show at some point, once it airs, is going to be an hour long as opposed to a half hour. But I mean, do you guys see them as sort of the future of that show? It's been such a mainstay. And James Andrew Miller did a whole feature on PTI as part of his podcast with regards to the origins of ESPN. Do you see those guys sort of settling into that role by the time the dust settles and clears?
I mean, it depends what you think of the PTI brand. I personally have associated with, and I assume most people have, with Kornheiser and Wilbon for so long that if you have the PTI brand consistently hosted by two people that are not Tony and Mike, it's going to get a lot of backlash and kind of fail. Whereas if you kind of model a show based on PTI with different hosts, I think it could end up succeeding in the long term.
Andrew?
Yeah, I agree. I think the only way you could really get to PTI hosted by somebody else is if you do it incredibly gradually, of if you do sort of a big phasing out and, okay, this week we've got Tony hosting with Pablo, and next week we've got Wilbon hosting with Bomani, and just sort of like, if you do that over the span of years, maybe that eventually gets to the point where those guys host that show. I don't think it's all that likely. I think it's much more likely they wind up with something sort of based on that model, and that they become maybe sort of the successors in terms of what ESPN's looking to do there, but I don't think they necessarily take it over. What's interesting with them, though, is, I mean, I'm starting to get the sense more and more that promoting them and having them as sort of those next figures, I think that was certainly a thing that John Skipper approved of and something that was a goal for ESPN under the Skipper regime. I'm not sure of how much of it's a Connor Schell thing, and I'm interested to see where that goes sort of with Connor Schell being reportedly maybe on a little bit of thinner ice with Get Up not really working, with the other things there not really working. And I'm interested to see how, if Pablo and Bomani in particular are something that's going to be the future of ESPN, or if they were the future for the last group of ESPN management.
So this is an interesting discussion because we've sort of been in limbo for so long as to what their futures will be. You mentioned Get Up. I think it's an easy transition into the conversation about Katie Nolan that took place this week. Andrew Marchand, who, correct me if I'm wrong, with the New York Post now, correct?
Yes.
Before that, I think it was a long time beat reporter, I think for the New York Mets or the Yankees. Either way, he's now covering media and wrote an interesting piece that I disagreed with. And I think he might have gotten a little bit of unnecessary backlash. I think it was a lot more headline-centric than maybe people meant for it to be. But it was on the idea of that ESPN has brought in Katie Nolan, and they're paying her a substantial amount of money. Within the headline, it was, why is Katie Nolan making seven figures at ESPN? And sort of my initial thought and perspective on it was, that's kind of what the market was for Katie Nolan at the time. She was a commodity in this industry that was well sought after. Fox didn't necessarily know what they wanted to do with her. ESPN, whether they knew or not, knew that they wanted her to be a part of whatever they were doing for the future. Now, again, you guys brought it up, the idea that there's new management now at ESPN, and maybe they're still trying to get their footing. But I don't have an issue with Katie Nolan making seven figures. I think she's terrific at her job, because I think she's able to take her ability to relate to the younger audience that ESPN needs to grow. You don't get those viewers without somebody like Katie Nolan being a major integral part of growing your brand and growing your audience, especially from a younger standpoint when everybody is starting to cut the cord more and more. So I didn't necessarily take issue with what Katie Nolan is making at ESPN, but I also felt like Andrew Marchand kind of got a little bit of a bad rep in that article, because I don't know if it was necessarily implied by him, more so the headline as to why she's making that money, more about what's next for her future, I think was the underlying thesis of this. I don't know what you guys thought about that.
Some of the criticism of Andrew Marchand for that is certainly fair. I think a lot of it goes to what you were saying, Ben, about the framing of that article. And some of that maybe isn't on him. Some of it may be on the Post's headline writers and so on. But the article was very much framed as Katie Nolan doesn't deserve this amount of money given how little she's doing. And that's sort of fair. It's sort of, if you look at exactly what Katie Nolan is doing right now, she is making a lot more than a lot of other ESPN personalities who are probably doing more and probably are more regularly on TV and so on. I think that's missing some important context. And like you said, that was a lot of that was about the market for Katie Nolan at the time they got her. Now, if she couldn't figure out anything with Fox that both sides would agree on, but there was certainly interest from Fox in having her. They liked her. They wanted to bring her to LA and do things there. That didn't work, whatever. But there's a lot of people interested in doing things with Katie Nolan. Katie Nolan, it has done a lot for them with the SportsCenter on Snapchat stuff. And I think if it never goes beyond that, then we can look back at this and be like, okay, this was a bad deal. But even that article is talking about, well, they're trying to do these things with her. They're trying to figure out what to do with her. I think if that article was done more carefully and phrased more to what's Katie Nolan really going to be up to, I don't think it's really a big issue. The other thing that comes up here, though, is the salary stuff. And the salary stuff is interesting because if you compare it to like the NFL or any sports league or whatever, most pro sports leagues, we have such a good idea of what absolutely everyone is making. In the sports media, it's such a very small percentage of the people that right. We know what they're making, and we know and that we can compare it to. And I think that's a huge part of the challenge here, is that stating her salary and doing it in that particular way comes off really as an attack on her, and it's an attack on ESPN's decision making in bringing her in. If there was more information out there, if it was regularly put out there, okay, person X is making Y, person X, person Z is making Z, etc., I don't think this would be as big of a deal. But because that information isn't generally out there, I think it turned into much more of a controversy because of that, and that's just the reality of the media landscape at the moment.
Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with Andrew, and I think the lack of context we have also plays a part. Like, okay, Katie Nolan is making seven figures. What does that rank in the company at ESPN? We know it's not, like, top 10. Is it top 30? Is it top 50? Is it even top 80? We have no idea. I remember, since he's been in the news this week, Rick Riley, when he first signed with ESPN, we were all losing our minds because I think his contract was something like $2 million a year.
Yeah, it was a lot.
$3
million. Clearly, phoning in, and it was really bad. And now we're looking at half that and wringing our hands and going crazy, and the landscape has changed so much, we don't have the necessary context to evaluate it. I think it just kind of comes off as a little old-fashioned, a little nearsighted, not really looking at the bigger picture.
Yeah, I think that's well said, and that's where we'll end today's roundtable. My thanks to Joe Lucia. My thanks to Andrew Buckle. It's great stuff as always, guys. Follow them on Twitter and read their work over at awfulannouncing.com. We'll be back soon with another edition of the Awful Announcing Podcast. presented by Clip It, the number one way to share your favorite clips with your family and friends. Download the Clip It app today on Android and on iOS. For Joe, for Andrew, it's Ben. We'll talk to you guys again soon. Be good.